So just your attention, please. We're going to get this session going in just a moment. This is the First Nations and local government working together session. It was allocated for the small communities group, and it'll be offered tomorrow for the large group. If you're with the large group and want to attend, there are two other clinics. There's UBCM funding programs, which is down the hall, and there's making meetings work, which is in Ballroom A next door. So our presenters are here. There are handouts at the back if you want to follow along. Okay. It's going to be required, yeah.
For the large?
Yeah. So good morning. I think we'll get started. We've got a lot of great ground to cover this morning. Session is entitled Local Government and First Nations Working Together. And it's all about developing strong relationships between our local governments and First Nations. We've got three people on the panel, as you can see. First is Nicola Moratz, who's the Executive Director of Governance and Structure Branch in the Ministry of Community, Sport, and Cultural Development. She leads a team that provides advice, solves problems, exercises some provincial oversight related to restructuring of local governments. She deals also with the topic of this session, local government First Nations relations. Nicola's been with the ministry for over 20 years, working on key policy and legislative programs. And we had I don't know whether it was a pleasure, but we had the opportunity to work together for about probably over a year on the development of the community charter. So Nicola is the expert in the community charter. She joined the provincial government in 1989. She did her political science degree at SFU and her law degree at UVic. One little anecdote about Nicola, she clerked for the Supreme Court of Canada. So very, not many, long time ago, but a very engaging opportunity. So we also have Steve Arnett from the town of Ladysmith and Councillor Terry Sampson from the Stoumenas First Nation. Steve has lived in Ladysmith since 1993 and is currently serving his third term as councillor. In his work life, he is Chief Executive Officer of the Nanaimo Youth Services Association, earning a bachelor's degree and master's degree in social work from the University of Calgary. He's a registered social worker with over 32 years of practice in senior leadership positions in Alberta and BC, working in the nonprofit sector. Steve has the privilege of working with a variety of First Nations youth and their communities over the last three decades. Steve wants to point out that he's English, French-Canadian, and Ojibwe heritage on his maternal side, so quite representative of the three founding nations. in Canada. He has been married to Kathy for 37 years and has two adult sons. They're all and residents of Ladysmith. So, Councillor Terry Sampson, the name comes from his three great-grandfathers. He was chief of the Sinemis First Nation for 6 years. In that capacity, sat on the Holkameedom Treaty Group Board of Directors, chaired the Natsimwat Tribal Council, was board member on the Intertribal Health Council, is an Island Corridor Foundation Board of Directors, which is another interesting local government First Nations partnership example, and the First Nations Summit Chief Health Committee. Now, after 14 years as a councilman, he is still a board member of the Natsimut Tribal Council and representative on the Holkameedom Gulf Islands Parks Canada Committee. Terry was born in Ladysmith, graduated from Ladysmith Secondary, and spent the majority of his career working in Aboriginal organizations, mostly for the Sinemis people, as in the BC courts, as a native court worker, First Nations prison liaison officer in federal and BC corrections, and Sewell districts as a First Nations education advisor. He's also served as a station store manager and founding member of the ENN Railway, now called the Island Corridor Foundation. Married for 33 years, daughter and three-year-old grandson. So the format is that Nicola is going to provide just kind of an overview context about what the local governments have been doing in building relationships with First Nations. And then we're going to go to the heart of the matter, a case study with Steve and Terry. And so I'll let Nicola begin, and I'll just go and watch.
Thank you, Richard, and thank you to everybody for being here this morning, bright and early. I'd like to begin by recognizing that we're meeting on the traditional territory of the Coast Salish people. And as Richard said, my role here is just to give a bit of context and some overview, and then we'll turn it over to Terry and Steve. So just to get started, I'm going to talk a bit about treaty negotiations, regional district membership, engagement and consultation, and relationship building. And then, of course, you're going to hear a real-life story of that relationship building, because that, at the end of the day, is really what it's all about. It's about relationships among neighbors. Just a quick overview of similarities and differences between local government systems and First Nations systems. Some quick facts. There's lots of similarities, and there's a number of differences. Local governments are generally under provincial jurisdiction. First Nations, on the whole, are still under federal jurisdiction. Local governments typically rely on property taxation for the bulk of their revenues. First Nations generally are not taxing the property of band members. However, they are often taxing reserve land lessees and receiving revenue that way. They're both community governments, so they're all facing challenges of economic, social, and demographic trends. First Nations typically have more responsibility for things like education, health, social services on their lands than local governments do. But there are a lot of similarities. We're talking two systems that both have elected councils. They're both about providing services. They're both about having infrastructure and making sure it's in good repair and trying to figure that out. Over the past few years, First Nations governments have seen changes in land use and finance arrangements, which are increasing even the parallels with local government for First Nations. So the First Nations Land Management Act allows for more control for First Nations at the local level over land use and financial arrangements. As well, there's now a body called the First Nations Finance Authority, through which First Nations can borrow to build community infrastructure. It's got a lot of parallels to the Municipal Finance Authority, the idea of raising capital and being backed by the pooled collective credit of the borrowing pool. And so it's interesting to see those similarities and realize that that really is part of the basis for why a neighbor-to-neighbor relationship at the end of the day is important, because the interests are quite the same. There's lots of differences, but there's a lot of similarities in trying to build the best environment for your respective communities. I'm going to touch briefly, just for a minute or so, about treaties and land claims and that whole complex world, just because I think it's important context for relationship building. 1763, King George III issued the Royal Proclamation. That's the basis of Aboriginal land claims to this day. Unlike the rest of Canada, only historic treaties in BC were the Douglas Treaties of Vancouver Island and Treaty 8 in the northeast of the province. It was then almost 100 years until another treaty was signed. And then after 30 years of work, that was the Nisga Treaty, which was signed with BC and Canada in 1998. Since then, two other treaties have been signed, the Tsawwassen, which was effective April 2009, and the Malnuth, which was effective in April of 2011. There are another 60 First Nations in the BC treaty process right now. The majority are at the agreement in principle stage, which is considered stage four of a six-stage process. That treaty process includes a role for local governments, and that's formalized under an agreement with UBCM and the Ministry of Aboriginal Relations and Reconciliation, so that local government elected officials can provide input into that process when it's happening. There's two areas of interest that are particularly addressed in final agreements. That Treaty First Nations are to consult with neighboring local governments on changes to land use on adjacent property, and also that Treaty First Nations can obtain services. And they can do that either through a service contract with the local government or by virtue of regional district membership. And it's that regional district membership that's the new relatively new innovation. That came about in 2007 when the Local Government Act was changed to create a new category of regional district member. So if a treaty First Nation joins a regional district, they take on a municipal-like role for that purpose. They participate in regional services and are generally operating under the same rules at the board table as the other members. To date, there are three of the five Malnuth First Nations that are members of the Alberni-Clayquot Regional District, and the Tsawwassen First Nation, of course, is on the Metro Vancouver Board. That's one slide I wanted. Given the limited number of treaties that are actually in place, it's important to keep in mind that there's another big factor in this context, and that's court decisions. They have been shaping since the 1970s, especially relationships between non-treaty First Nations and the Crown, in other words, the provincial and federal governments. And most of the cases tend to be, in fact, about the provincial and federal obligations, the provincial constitutional duty to consult. And that's been found to be in place. That there's a provincial constitutional duty to consult and to accommodate First Nations whenever a proposed decision or activity could potentially adversely affect Aboriginal rights and title, claimed or proven. And so it's this evolution of court cases that have been shaping, been a big factor in a lot of the relationships. There's a few recent court cases that are of interest. I'm not going to really talk about them, other than if there's questions towards the end, that's happy to point out some of the facts of those. The Silcateen is obviously the most recent one that happened in June of 2014, and that's the one that there's been a lot of media coverage about. And that is one where I think it's fair to say it's still very early days, and there's a lot of consideration still going on amongst First Nations at the provincial and federal levels about what exactly that decision will mean going forward. So at the end of the day, what does all this context mean for local governments? Just want to draw a distinction here between the provincial constitutional duty to consult and local government engagement. they're not the same thing, but they're often happening on the same kinds of issues, or they can complement one another. So there's a provincial duty to consult that arises often when you're dealing with a provincial statutory approval that a local government, for example, wants to change the boundaries of your municipality. Well, that is then may trigger a provincial duty to consult with First Nations. So that's where the local government engagement, which is basically a neighbor-to-neighbor relationship, can start to fit in, because you're the folks on the ground. You know what's actually going on. You know where the issues actually are. And hopefully, and we'll talk about establishing relationships with your neighbors, hopefully you've established relationships with your First Nations neighbors. And so you have the ability to actually help figure out what the practical solutions are that might be available for addressing any concerns that there might be about that proposal to extend your boundaries or to incorporate as a municipality, or a few other cases where the provincial duty to consult might get triggered. But at the end of the day, it's all about relationships. And there are some really good arguments for working together. I don't think I need to spend a lot of time on them, because they really are fairly common sense reasons. And the last one, I think, is the one that really holds true, which is it's because you're neighbors. And a lot of the same issues of services and infrastructure and engaging with your communities and wanting to make your communities better are the shared interests that you have. And that's actually the basis for moving forward and trying to work your way through the points where you may not agree, because at the end of the day, in relationships, there's always going to be points where you don't agree. And we're going to hear, I'm sure, about some of those points of agreement and disagreement in when Terry and Steve talk to you. My last slide is just to flag a few resources for you. I'm going to highlight the community-to-community forums program, and I've got a few of these brochures if anyone's interested in picking them up later. This is a really terrific program that's administered by UBCM, has some funding from the provincial and federal government. The First Nations Summit is also involved in supporting UBCM. And basically what it does is provide small amounts of seed money to allow entirely locally or regionally based forums between First Nations and local governments to get organized. Just a really practical, on-the-ground way of meeting each other, getting to know each other, and how that works. I mentioned the membership of the some of the Malnuth First Nations on the Alberni-Clayquot Regional District. There's also a guide called A Path Forward, and again, I've got a few copies of that one, which provides a really practical description of the journey that they went through to get to know each other, all the way through to Treaty First Nations becoming members of that regional district. And it provides some practical information on strengthening relationships between First Nations and local governments. So, and there's lots of other resources out there that are available to you. But if you're interested, those are a couple of starting points. And lastly, I point out to you Civic Info BC, which is a storehouse of all kinds of information. But they have examples of protocols and agreements that cover things like communication, cooperation, and even service agreements. So it's, again, there's lots of information out there. But now I think what's really important is to turn it over to the people who can tell you actually about how relationship building looks on the ground. So with that, I'll turn it over to Terry and Steve. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. Just before we start, I wanted just to get a sense of the audience, Terry and I. How many of you are newly elected this term? Quite a number of you. How many of you have been involved in working through issues with local First Nations in your communities? Okay, that's helpful. It's my great pleasure to give the mic over to Councillor Terry Sampson, my friend, my neighbor, and in many ways the mentor to our community originally of how to go about building relationship of respect and the generosity of the Stamenas people. What we're going to do is sort of tag team this morning. Terry's going to, and we're going to set a context for our partnership and the work we've done in the beginnings of our historic meeting. And we'll have some slides at first that aren't in your package. They're just to set context. And so from there, I'll turn it over to Terry. And I'll work the slides to start with. And so the green, aim it and press the green one and they move. Is that correct? Okay. So this is a partnership story, and we'll start with Terry. Here we go. Okay.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. I have to excuse my my voice. It's not what it is. Yeah, I got a bad cold. So anyway, thank the nations Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh for having us here in their territory. And also, you know, we talk about shared territory with each other as First Nations, but actually it's shared territory with all of us here and with other First Nations. And so, you know, we've shared for hundreds of years with different governments, municipalities, and so forth. And it was all about natural resources, extracting resources to build a town or build a city or build a province or build a country. And I've always shared that with whoever I speak to when it comes to meetings like this. And so I think it's really important that, you know, we've shared that. And but past governments never treated us that way. They felt that, you know, we need to be put in a place that, you know, maybe we were comfortable, and, you know, like with social, you know, social assistance and so forth. So, you know, we probably quite a few of us back in the day depended on you know, money coming to us free, and so that's where social or welfare came along. And really, we thought it was accommodating, but in the long run, it wasn't. It really put our people down, and we didn't strive to get an education or, you know, and so forth. So residential school was part of that too, and some of you might be aware of that it really, really affected us. I'm intergenerational residential school. My mom attended Penelakit or Cooper Island Residential School, and so this is something that really, really put us down, and we never really came out of the closet or the dark until, I guess I would say maybe 30 years ago, when we really start thinking we better get educated, we better start attending these educational institutions and getting degrees and so forth. And so anyway, this is something that I'm really proud to be here on behalf of my nation, Stamenas. The chief, unfortunately, was busy with a lot of other big issues. This is big, but sorry. But he thought, well, with my experience, as Steve was sharing, that it began in 2004 when we hosted a huge gathering, and we looked for someone to help us. And we needed a lot of space because we're inviting 5,000 people to our nation. And we didn't have enough room at some of our beaches, so we asked the town leaders if we could take some canoes into their in their beaches in one of the parks there. And so anyway, that's where we began started talking that, you know, we need to This is great. Thank you, Mayor Hutchins and the council, the town of Ladysmith. But that's where we really started beginning to build that relationship. So it's really important that, you know, we continue that relationship. But it's more, you know, when I talk about consultation, it's like, to me, it's like friendship. You know, I'm building a friendship here. We need to be partners and friends in whatever we're striving for, whether it's, coal mining, that wasn't shared with us. Forestry wasn't shared with us when there was timber moving out of our territories. And so, you know, that's, and we thought, well, we better start, could you help us, Town of Ladysmith? Town of Ladysmith could help us kind of work that out. So anyway, that's just something we need to start talking about, you know, how we could come out of that, I guess it's poverty. You know, that's something we're not, you know, proud of. We know we got 30, 40 homes in our community where there are tarps on the roofs. So, you know, we need help. We need the town. And I don't know how much they need us, but I think they need us. Anyway, I just wanted to share that little bit, and I guess we got to get on with this slide here. So sorry to take up so much time. Thank you for having me here this morning, and thank the local government leadership academy for inviting us, and appreciate your time with us.
Thanks. Yeah. I just want to make a comment about what Terry said. In our community, Terry, whether as chief or as councillor, is known as a very humble man, but has cast a huge shadow in terms of how this all began and how it's carried forward. So today we're going to add just a tiny bit more to the historical context. Then we're going to talk about our communities in conflict from 2000 to 2005 when you talk about consultation. My preference, there is conflict, but it was based on butting heads over the fact that we were for far too long two solitudes, as Terry has said. And then we're going to talk about the relationship building from 2006 to 2014, 2015 now, the challenges, successes, and lessons learned. So the first piece here, Terry, this is the outline of the traditional territory.
Yeah, that's kind of a good one. Yeah. Well, since treaty negotiations started in the 90s for us as Chimenas, and we were joint with the Hull Communion Treaty, what was called the Hull Communion Treaty Group organization, striving to achieve an agreement or a treaty with government, BC, and the federal government. So we needed to establish where our territories was, or our boundaries, or whatever you might, however you might put it. But I think in reality, back in the day, like I mentioned earlier, it was shared territory. We didn't have boundary because right from Victoria to Qualicum and here on the mainland, and far as the southern coast of our west southwest coast of North America to Oregon, we're all Coast Salish, but we never warred with each other. We defended each other from other nations that might have came into our territories. I guess you might say it's almost like our country from Oregon to Qualicum and here on the mainland to Vancouver. This is our territory that we needed to establish when it comes to treaty negotiation, because governments asked, well, where's your land? So we needed to make boundaries. So I guess hopefully that helps you understand where we're at with that part. So you can see some of the where we're at when it comes to Chimenas. And then we have our neighbor nation, Lyaxin, and Penelakut. So those are the nations that, and Cowichan They're a huge tribe, like a tribe of 4,500, and we're 1,300. So you know, it's just something we've been having a hard time with when it comes to, well, who shared. But when it comes to business, it seems that we're trying to grab and take and, you know, say, hey, no, we want, this is ours because there's lots of timber there or something like that, you know. So anyway, I just need to explain that part, I guess. Hopefully that helped. Thank you.
So we'll show you that in 1897, the ENN land grant was given with no consultation and no recognition historically. I think Nicola talked about there weren't too many treaties signed in BC then, so this land was just given with no consultation to the communities that you just saw on the map. Today, this is a map of where Stamenis Reserve is and where the town of Ladysmith is, and the harbor for many years stood as a wall between our communities, as Terry has said to me. And you'll remember that although I'm a third-term councillor and that I'm 22-some-odd years now in Ladysmith, Terry's family goes back eons in Ladysmith, in the area. So again, a view of the traditional territory. As Terry said, it is much larger than you tend to think. These are some pictures from the archives. There's not that many pictures, I guess, that we have anyway. But this was, as you can see, well-established communities of the Stamenis peoples. Well, where did we go here? Well, I guess the mayor put this together for me, and I guess he wanted me to show them one at a time, but we don't have the time for that. What I'll just say is that after the land grant, what happened is that there was copper mining going on the behalf of the settler community. There was then coal mining, or actually, there was then coal mining, and after that, logging, none of which was in partnership at a business level with Stamenis, as Terry said. And what happened is that the settler community came to the territory to a pristine harbor. It was full of fish. I've heard stories from Terry and other people from the community that there were whales and fish, and as people often say in Coast Salish, and I've only been introduced to the saying in the last couple of years myself, is that when the tide is out, the table is set. That's how pristine the ocean was. So in 100 years, what's happened is that we have left 2 million tons of coal slag in the harbor. We're trying to figure out whether we can exploit that somehow and create revenue and clean it up. But that has filled the harbor through the copper mining and the coal in particular with the coal slag and cadmium. And there are few fish, if any, left in the harbor now, although the sports clubs in the town and most particular Stamenis is working to try to bring fish back. When Terry talked about the tribal journeys and having 5,000 people come to the territory and then approaching the town about the beach, this is the beach here. We filled in, the settler community, the town of Leesmith, filled in 14 more acres of the harbor. And so actually that isn't the original boundaries. Terry can tell me exactly where the boundaries are, where the land was. But I think...
I don't
think this has it. Go ahead, Terry.
Anyway, as you see the point there, that's what Steve was talking about. That was never there before, the point on the, as you can see, sticking out there. That's all the, what did you say, 2 million tons?
Yeah.
2 million tons of leftover copper and mostly coal. But anyway, there was a area there where I talked about the park. I can't really tell that where that park is, but anyway, we had a longhouse there, and we had longhouses right along in the harbor there. I don't know if you know the area on the island, but there's the town of Chimanas, and then there's the Chimanas River. There was 11 longhouses along that river, and wherever there was fresh water, we had longhouses, and wherever there was salmon, we were there. We either built there or we had summer homes or whatever. Any time that when there was food moving around, like the salmon, we were there, and it was temporary homes, but we moved back and forth. And so anyway, this is. That was the area that they found many shell middens. I don't know how many you're aware, but clams or any shellfish are really important sustenance. And I didn't know why. And then I looked up the Google it, and clams got a lot of like B12. And I shared that with some people that I had to go into the see the doctor, get B12, because my energy was low, and that's what B12 is. It's an energy in it, and it. But anyway, and there's a whole bunch of other really important vitamins and proteins in it. But that's why maybe you might wonder, well, why, how come there's so much shells in these areas? And you know, if there's areas that you know about when it comes to our the Salish people. And so anyway, that's just something that. Sorry, Steve. Okay, thank you.
No, as you can see, with the point that we're trying to make is that, and again, I've come along lately, is that we changed the local environment for the original peoples here. This is what Ladysmith looks like now. We're celebrated for our heritage look, and this is our high school that was redone in the 90s. And it isn't until 1967, is my understanding, that that First Nations young people were invited to come to the public system. Although I've been doing a fair amount of learning in terms of reconciliation process lately, and you may be shocked or maybe not to know that historically the last residential school only closed in 96. Unbelievable. So, the effect of us coming, I think most people know, was that we brought new health concerns, diseases, measles and what have you, that decimated the population. Where the area we're talking about had 82,000 people, it was estimated, and that was dramatically cut by the tens of thousands as a result of disease. Traditional food sources were destroyed. To say, you know, people didn't know about the environment the way that we do today, and so it was just business. It made sense to exploit the resources, but we literally have destroyed this harbor, but we're trying to bring it back. Folks were relegated to reserves instead of traditional territory. Five generations of young people went to residential school, and for us, in terms of our purposes, there was little or no contact whatsoever from the beginning of the town incorporation and the Stamenis folks. So from 2000 and 2005 in particular, we experienced, in terms of our two solitudes, the beginnings of some conflict. And how that started was that the town... And I always get to say I wasn't on council then, so I don't have to take any of the responsibility, but we're all responsible, actually. So we went and we decided to expand the boundaries south, and the Huckman Treaty Group was in full swing, and we butted heads in terms of, you know, you guys can't just go ahead and expand your boundaries without talking to us. We've gone from there... this slide wasn't even here, actually. this just gives you an idea. 20% of the town land is considered crown land. Of course, the crown land is all within the Stamenis territories. And so south, we were expanding to this industrial park and some more housing. In 2001, you may have heard that Ladysmith became famous all over Canada because our water reservoir was contaminated from an unknown source. That led to us needing to look within that territory for land. You can see, I don't have the pointer, but you can see down at the confluence of the green and the red where our original open reservoir was. So we decided to talk about a new reservoir, and that's it today. And that became the opportunity for us to really begin to work through some of our conflicts and understand that we needed to consult with and talk with the Stamenis First Nation in particular about any kind of expansion. And we are on their traditional territory using the waters that they traditionally used. And Terry will just briefly tell you that while we're enjoying that water and we're wanting to expand our water resources and protect them because of contamination, on reserve.
Yeah, you wouldn't believe that we're struggling with trying to get some clean water in our community. But it's just like what Steve was sharing about contaminated water. I guess with wildlife and whatnot doing that, or any other, say, coal or whatever, contaminating the waters, it's the same thing in our community. Our water is mostly wells, and so I don't know it's probably natural resources, coal or something that's polluting the water. So anyway, we're struggling for over 100 years, and we have the town of Ladysmith maybe getting good clean water, and a lot of the water and the bigger streams are on the Ladysmith side, our town of Ladysmith, across the harbor from us, that our main community is right across of 2,000, maybe 2,500 acres, and that's majority of our community. That's where our majority of our community is at, and we look across, and geez, wonder how we could get some water from over there and to our community. And so, anyway, that's still another story. I think we're still working on and getting water. So, but yeah. So anyway, we knew the town needed water, and so town needed to come to agreement or terms with us to say, you know, we need to do this, and for the people there. And we said, yes, of course, you know. So anyway.
In 2004, Terry talked about the Tribal Journeys. That was really one of the first social comings together that was quite large between the two communities. I remember being there. It was a wonderful celebration, but it was raining hard. This is a picture of what we hope to do down the road. It's is develop the harbor together, and of course, as Nicholas said, that will mean real consultation. Okay. This is the beginnings of our story, and we're going to go through the slides a lot quicker now. I wanted to give you a historical context. Under the leadership as Chief, Chief Terry Sampson, this is the story we're going to start with.
Just read from that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, as I stand here, you know, I'm starting to realize consultation is about, or could be about, friendship, building a friendship, and that's the meaning for me as when it comes to consultation. I think we were people that were quite friendly people, and we were always taught to help your neighbors. And back in the day, you know, I talked about 20 or 30 big houses around in the harbor and Chimenez River. We were good neighbors. We treated our families really well. And I would have seen my great grandfather accepting people coming in the territory. And welcoming, you know, them with open arms, because what I understand, some of the history, some of the journeys that some of the countries came to or to the lands here, struggled, and you know, traveling so many months. But so anyway, we began to realize, you know, I guess to come to terms in writing, because a lot of our history is oral, and But now we're understanding that, you know, it needs to be in writing now, legally, when it comes to lawyers and so forth. So so we did this in 2006. My third term and last term as chief, we needed to do that agreement, and it meant well, and it has meant well, and so over 40 joint council meetings since 2006, joint council dinners, public activities like with the tribal journeys. So all those things are really important, and former mayor Rob Hutchins, he just he declined to run this past term, and every time he sees me, he calls me brother, and it seems that his arms are opened up more than mine now. Like it kind of switched where, you know. So he always makes me feel good when I see him, because you know he says, "Hey, brother," kind of thing. Wow. So you know that. No, that's part of consultation, I guess, in a way. So anyway, that's just something that is really dear to me, I guess, you know, and hopefully my daughter and my grandson will feel that, you know, at the time when, you know, when I'm not around, you know, kind of thing. So hopefully that continues to build, and hopefully you'll help that, you know, with your towns or your cities that, you know, we need each other. And it seems mostly that we need you to help us get out of this poverty. You know, well, we've been living in a depression for over 100 years, and right now we're at 30% unemployment in our nation. But anyway, we keep going on. Sorry, Steve.
So what Terry, again, being humble, what you see on these photos is a traditional blanketing ceremony, and Terry led the way in full view of the Stamenis community, invited the town to come and sign this agreement in a traditional blanketing ceremony. And what happened, and I'll let Terry just mention the significance of that, was that the town was embraced by the Stamenis peoples, despite what had happened over the last 100 years, embraced to begin to work in friendship. And the mayor was blanketed for himself, but also as a representative of the town. And the picture of Terry as chief and the former mayor as the mayor embracing is really symbolic to me. Do you want to just say a couple of words about the protocol, and then we'll really flip through?
Well, the explanation for the blanketing part, it's a practice that we've done for 100 years, and the blanket didn't look like that. It was probably made in cedar weaving. So, but we took on that concept of easier to get a blanket, go to the store and grab a blanket. So instead of weaving, it'd probably take, I don't know how long it takes to weave, but anyway, that blanketing part of it is, it means that the mayor should, if he still has that blanket, we'll be comforted by it and looked after, because it was blessed by the Stamenis people to protect him from any harm, whether it's health or whatever it is. But it's just something he'll see that blanket and he'll remember. Oh yeah, I remember the Stamenis people, what they did in the past. And so anyway, that's part of the friendship part of it, I guess, in a way too. So okay, thank you.
So symbolically, from the tradition of the Stamenis people, we have been embraced, and we have lots to live up to. We've also had other community groups helping us over time. We have the Ladysmith Maritime Society, which is a community marina on the harbor, and they organize. They have a festival in June of every year, end of May, 1st of June, where my wife and I actually organized the face painting for all the kids. And so we came from over at Shell Beach in the canoe, paddling together, which is so important symbolically. In 2007, the town grocery store organized a Guinness Book of World Records, the largest road hockey event in the world, 192 teams, over 2,000 people. And the council played against the Stamatis First Nations, and the Stamatis First Nations won. I wasn't on council until 2008, or it might have been a different story. In 2010, during the Olympics, you may have heard of the Ladysmith Light Up, and if you haven't, you need to Google it, and you need to come, because it is an event not to be missed. In 25 years, Stamatis people had never been invited to be part of the parade, and the then chief and the current chief, Chief John Elliott, sat in a canoe with other folks and the mayor, and they were in the parade. And there's Light Up for those of you who haven't been there. So we've had a number of meetings and dinners and celebrations. We're building a stronger relationship from 2006 for the next 6 years, council. But there was no real action on shared interest, which is think about the water that we talked about. I had lived for a number of years in Ladysmith and did not know, even though my kids played with and played soccer with a number of families in Stamatis, that that part of that reserve, you know, had to boil water a number of times or bring water in the summer while we were using the water where that was traditionally part of the concert. So we were meeting, and at this point in time, we got into some of the harder issues when you start talking about doing things on land that's under treaty negotiations. And Stamatis First Nations at that meeting posed the question, is this consultation? And the town said, if this isn't consultation, us meeting and talking together, what is? Well, there's a lot more legal aspects to it, and there's a lot more formality. And so there was a decision to have a joint session with respective lawyers and have some learnings about what that should be. There's some pictures of that. It happened over at Page Point. And Page Point actually is a resort on the other side of the harbor across from Ladysmith, much closer to the reserve. So this is our story of Natsumat, which is working together. And the challenge was that we first were to form a working committee with elected officials and staff to move beyond just relationship building. Terry has said the most important thing is to be greeted as brother, but when we get down to, as he said, needing to work towards sharing the wealth in traditional territory, we sometimes run into legalities because we're municipalities. We're a legal entity. The Stamatis First Nations is a legal entity. And so some of the things to carry on for the future need to be written down. So we have a working committee, three appointed to each council, for the Stamatis First Nations, the chief, the administrator, the manager of business development, and for the town, the mayor, the director of development services, and the CAO. The first meeting was February 2012. We said what we wanted to do, define a shared interest in community resilience, develop a high-level MOU, time to do a new MOU that really reflected literally 6 years of change in the treaty process and the legal process and some court decisions. Develop a high-level MOU to move forward, develop process in terms of consultation using best practice guidelines, improve access for the reserve for and the townspeople for sewer and water, meet collectively, solve issues, always including experts. We have some legal bills, so get ready for those, folks. Develop trust in the room. We break bread. We share experiences, and we got 5 minutes, and that's okay. Share governance models. The challenges we had is there was little direction from the joint councils on what the mandate was because there were different changes in the two councils. Never worked before in this kind of legal constructed manner. Had a short history together. We had agendas, and we didn't meet as regularly as possible. We're willing to spend time in the process in terms of success, learn about our organizations, take roles on to move the process forward, and the town learned to bake shortbread cookies, which is the current chief's passion. In the first year, 2012, we met 14 times. We've had shared knowledge, aha moments when we reviewed a community accord. There was no implementation of mention of implementation actions, no inclusion of the Stamenis language. We decided to do better, and our first task was to renew the 207 community accord. So this is the new Article 4 in that the new accord, agreed to joint education and topics of mutual interest, governance consultation, agreed to jointly develop external communication messaging, and develop further agreements as MOUs and protocols for working committees, etc. This is a picture of the accord. I was a witness to the first accord in the ceremony. As a community member, Terry gave me the great honor of asking me to be a witness, and I signed the next agreement in 2012 as a member of council. So there is a picture of that happening. And this is down on the harbor where we've been working together with the Ladysmith Maritime Society. This is a picture of us. It's a little distorted. It's like one of those mirrors you stand in front and they make you just a little bit rounder because, as you can see up here, we're much slimmer. So we've had new ways of working together over the next 12 to 18 months. We shared hurts of the past. We had a meeting where we actually talked about, in terms of the social work kind of process that I'm used to, the real sense of each other and with genuine honesty. And, you know, we talked about prejudice, we talked about racism, we talked about a number of other things, and we got those things out in a healing model. We shared governance models, community interests, timelines, because we don't always agree, reasons why we can't do some things, reasons why we have to do some things in a certain way, what our dreams and ambitions and hopes are. We've had other agreements, a cooperation protocol, the new MOU in October, terms of reference for the Natsumat Steering Committee, which again is working together, Natsumat. Used examples from other communities. Nicola mentioned the C2C forum guide. That's been really helpful. Strongly encourage you as councillors to work with that. This is the process. It describes our mission. The SFN and town are building a working relationship based on mutual respect, cooperation, friendship, and trust. And that's despite all the legalities that need to happen. Terry has, as the originator of reaching out to the community, said it's about neighborliness and being brothers. The cooperation protocol is a steering committee. Elected councils meet annually to monitor and evaluate. We established cooperative planning. We've got 16 potential joint initiatives, and the protocol's in effect at 2017. There's the agreement signing. We're signing on water and sewer services, economic development initiatives in Crown Land, watershed protection, etc. We renamed ourselves the Natsumat Steering Committee, and it sets out how we work together. Everybody has to be in attendance or we don't meet. The meeting is chaired on an alternate basis. Agendas are mutually determined. Meetings take place at town council chambers, and town has a secretariat role. In terms of reference, best practices, develop an information sharing framework, establish strategic goals and priorities together, and develop a work plan that's signed off by both councils, report jointly to the councils, and prepare an annual written report. Because it wouldn't be functional for both the councils in full total to be working together. We need some representatives to make that happen. The Coast Salish Development Corporation is building a pipeline for economic development and creating a new community, and Terry can answer some questions later about that. And they needed access to sewer and water, and so we signed an agreement on that, or they wouldn't have been able to go forward with the economic development plan. This was the relationship building event that we had, the social working kind of stuff that some people don't think is important, but it's really the basis of relationship. It's honest, genuine communication. Breaking bread together, in this case it's pie, and you can see that the chief doesn't have any because he likes shortbread better. And so it was really a neat exercise. We share our principles, we share natural resources, all residents have access to services, no subsidy, no profit. Everybody pays the same. Seventh generation won't know what a reserve is. We have a number of services agreement. We did use the First Nations toolkit, and Nicola, I think you referenced that as well. Really important, the FCM toolkit to use around legal agreements. We spent 19 months in the agreement, hundreds of hours, And so a lot of this is just really more about the details, such as IR-12, 1,000 units in terms of access of water and sewer, and 500 to Shell Beach to help them with some of their struggles there. The challenges, we're not familiar with some of the funding that Aboriginal groups have, service connections, there's concerns about that, capacity run systems, water metering. We are famous for our water metering and making sure we don't use as much water, but that's not part of the protocol of Stamenis First Nations in terms of charging for water historically. So you can see what our successes are. We did, when we wanted to do our sewage plant, we discovered we were near a midden. And if the Stamenis First Nations had wanted to, we would never have been able to expand our sewer capacity because of that midden. But we reached an agreement to move it, and I encourage you to talk to our town staff or have your staff talk to our town staff and the Stamenis First Nations about how that process was worked out, because it's extraordinary. We're going to start putting up signage of First Nations in traditional Hokuminam around the town and recognize First Nation place names, and we feel the next agreement will be easier. This was dinner at the mayor's house. We had another game. This time it was a beanbag baseball game. If any of you saw the Dallas Cowboys and the Green Bay Packers last week, you'll know there was a very controversial call. We had one here, and unfortunately, Stamenis First Nations won again. So other ways that we're connecting is, as we're here today, we're building inspection services for construction on SFN lands. We're having paddling together events. We share meals together. And the challenge for many people is to be introduced to the history that hasn't been talked about in terms of settler communities and First Nations, but that's starting to come about. Work plan in process, and I know I'm over my 5 minutes, so I'm getting through here. Here's the top lessons. Spend time on relationships. Don't rush the process like I've just done. Bring new members along. Keep councils informed. Report to the community. And where we are now, we speak with one voice or as far as possible. You have all these slides. I'm just going to say to you, it is my great honor to have been invited to do this for you, and most especially with Terry, who I just have great respect for and who is my friend.
So, Steve, you get your. So, on behalf of the ALGLA, really wanted to thank you both for telling just a very inspirational story. And I'm sure if you'll be want to go out in the foyer, if people want to come and ask you some questions, you'll be available for a while?
Yes.
Good. Thank you again.
Thank you, sir.
Good. There's just a little token of our. Thank you. Okay, going to have to get going as the large urban folks want to get in this room, but I have a public service announcement for one person who's parked in the red zone, license plate number 858PSV. You should attend to your car while it's still there. So just logistics, the small communities, newly elected sessions are next door, starting immediately. The small communities' returning elected officials are down the hall in the Camby room. So those are the financial management. One is in the A. Financial management two is in the Camby room. In this ballroom, we're going to have the plenary session for the large urban communities. On roles and responsibilities. So if we can move to our allotted rooms, we can get going as soon as possible.